ready, Senator? Will everyone in the Missouri Senate please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
Thomas Kempis said, "Place me where you will and use me according to your wisdom. I am in your hands as your servant, ready to do all that you command." Gracious God, we are here to serve not ourselves, but the people whom you have given us to care for. Let us always be mindful that the demands and responsibilities we feel comes as a result of the many blessings which you have given us, and may we always use them in service to your people and the caring one for another required of us. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Keaveney, Kehoe, Kraus, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Pergeson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright Jones,
a quorum is present. Session. Secretary, read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 41st day, Monday, March 28, 2011. The Senate met pursuant to adjournment. President Kinder in the chair. Reverend Carl Gauck offered the following prayer. Be glad and rejoice forever in what I am creating. Isaiah.
Senator from 23rd.
Mr. President, I move for the reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. The senator from the 10th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I am excited to have with me today five fabulous women from the Kansas City area. Actually, my intern is not from the Kansas City area. But today, as many of you know, is Women's Lobby Day in the Capitol, so I'm excited that these folks are with me. In from Kansas City, we have three not only strong women, but strong labor women. We have Michelle Newby from Local 42, International Association of Firefighters. She's also a firefighter in Kansas City. Judy Morgan, former president from AFT, and Sherry Cheney from the Communication Workers of America. Also with me today, I have Derica Purnell. Derica is an amazing young student at UMKC. She's actually originally from St. Louis County, saw the error of her ways and moved to the good side of the state, and we're happy to have her. She is thinking about going to law school, so I would have everyone in the body encourage her to do that. And then also I want to introduce my intern, Taylor Dukes, a student at the University of Missouri. Please make them welcome.
Let's welcome all the guests of the senator from the 10th to the Missouri Senate. Senator from Newton.
President, I just want to answer the roll call. I'm present. I'm here.
Okay. Senator from Lawrence.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to introduce special guests.
Proceed.
I'd also like to express my enthusiastic joy that the senator from Newton is here this morning. But the two guests that I'd like to introduce are traipsing around the seat of the senator from the 11th. They are lovely little girls, Caitlin and Rhiannon Morrow from Bolivar, Missouri. Their father is proudly standing over by the door, my chief of staff, Patrick Morrow. I'd ask that the young ladies be welcomed and made pages for the day to serve with opulent compensation from their father.
It shall be so ordered. We're delighted to welcome all the guests of the senator from Lawrence, including the young pages. pages for the day. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to speak on a point of personal privilege.
Senator will be heard on a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, last night we had the Senate's charity bowling tournament, and I wanted to let you know that last night, and let all the members know, that we raised $3,915 for the Senate's Relay for Life team. And so that brings our total over the last 10 years to $81,451 over the last 10 years to support cancer research and families. Our winners of the tournament last night were, surprisingly, the team of King Richards with 2,109 pins, and they beat everyone else, but the second place team, they beat the Wasson's Bowl Movement team by about 350 pins. So thanks again, everybody, for participating, and we certainly want to thank all of our sponsors and Westgate and Lanes who donated the bowling last night, which allowed us to raise as much as we did. So thanks to everyone.
Senator, thank you for sharing with us the names of the teams. For what purposes, Senator from Phelps, seek recognition?
Introduction, very special guest.
Proceed.
Mr. President, I would like to call your attention on your right and my left. I have all five of my grandchildren in the chamber today. Be Tristan Brown, Brody Brown, Kennedy Brown, Maya Cheryl, Rio Cheryl, and family friend Amanda Smith. And, of course, their drivers are with them. Please make them welcome.
Let's welcome all the guests of the Senator from Phelps to the Missouri Senate. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Photographers from the Missouri News Horizon have been given permission to take pictures in the Senate chamber today. And without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection.
Senate bills for perfection.
The informal calendar, Senate Bill 175.
Informal calendar, Senate Bill 175. The senator from Lewis is on his feet.
Yeah, Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill number 175 be called from the informal calendar and taken up for perfection.
You have heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion it shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before us, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a bill that is familiar to many of us. In 2007, I was honored to help pass Senate Bill 339. Actually, very unanimous decision. Actually, a unanimous in the Senate. You know, fast forward to 2011 here. Local public agencies have largely ignored the requirement under the Fairness in Public Construction Act and continue to require bidders to be union only. Not only have public entities largely ignored the law that we passed in 2007, but was challenged in Cole County Court, the local circuit court judge struck down most of the provisions of the legislation and rendered them largely ineffective. Thus, the legislation that I bring to you today simply says that discrimination based on a contractor's affiliation is not a legitimate basis for denying the contractor the right to bid on public works projects in the state of Missouri. It's purely an unfair bidding practice. We stop that with this bill. And with that, Mr. President, I move for its adoption.
You've heard the motion from the senator from Lewis. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? The senator from the 13th, for what reason do you seek recognition?
To inquire the senator from Lewis.
Senator from Lewis, do you yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Good morning. Okay.
Morning. What is a project labor agreement?
I'm sure you know more about
I know what it is, but you're the one handling the bill, so I'm asking you. What is a project labor agreement?
That is when groups, contractors, agree to sign on to a signatory with those, and you could probably help me out with that.
Well, I mean, you're handling the bill. So
yeah.
You've given a dissertation of what a project labor agreement is. You have introduced a bill. I believe you got five co-sponsors on the bill. You have passed the bill out of committee. You talked the bill that you voted on in the Missouri House that we dealt with in 2007, and you have done an explanation. I am a state senator. I understand the issue. But you're the one trying to change. You are the one bringing up court cases. So you have all this information of why we need to change it. I am standing up asking you, okay, you want to change the law. What does it do? I don't think it's my job to
it
tell you what it does.
It prohibits discriminatory practices in contract bidding.
How does it discriminate?
When they say that it can only be a union job, that is discriminatory. You lock out.
It does not say it has to be a union-only job.
They have to sign the signatory.
Okay. Where is the creation of project labor agreements that they affect the state?
Pardon?
Where did they originate?
Where do they originate?
Yeah, you have a project labor agreement. Why would so many issues facing the Missouri General Assembly? Here, let's take a step back, okay? You talk about a bill we passed in 2007 to deal with how project labor agreements are implemented. I think we got 564 school districts in the state of Missouri. Am I right?
520-something, I think.
520-something school districts?
But...
Okay, we got that many districts. We got, 115 counties? 114 counties in the city of St. Louis in the state of Missouri? That's roughly right.
That is right.
How many municipal governments do we have in the state of Missouri? St. Louis County alone. St. Louis County alone, we got 93 municipal governments. That's just St. Louis County. St. Charles County, I believe, has 7. How many fire districts do you think we have in the state? I have no idea.
So if we have one or we have 100 of these,
well,
if it's a discriminatory practice, is it right?
How many project labor agreements have taken place in your senatorial district?
I'm not aware of any, but I say, okay. Is it right?
There has been, it's up to the local political subdivision to
but
use
it's taxpayer
the
money, Senator, and that doesn't make it right if it's discriminatory.
You believe it's right for us to dictate to local political subdivisions how best to use the tax dollars and how to make it
efficiently. I believe it's right to stand up for the taxpayers in Missouri, irregardless of what subdivision or political subdivision they are in.
Well, I know you passed a bill last week that has an unknown general revenue fiscal note, so we know how you're worried about the taxpayers.
And
all right, here I have some information. We have 115 counties. That's 114 counties in the city of St. Louis. We have 561 school districts in Missouri, 961 cities in Missouri, 23 fire protection districts in St. Louis County alone.
So what's your
2,783 water systems in the state of Missouri. And since this law passed in 2007, out of all those political subdivisions, two have used project labor agreements. Now, when you're talking about the court cases, one of the court cases you talk about was dealing with Bayless School District. Bayless School District didn't even do a project labor agreement, and they were challenged in court on it. So here we're using court cases to challenge them when they weren't even used. Now, the two school districts, one is in Jefferson County, and the other one is in Jackson County. Now, to do these, they have to go through... To do these, we passed a bill in 2007 that stipulates the requirements they have to go through to
That's
do these.
That's true.
So
and there were some mistakes.
With all the issues facing the state of Missouri, where's this front and center at? Two projects since 2007, over 3,000 to 4,000 political subdivisions in the state.
So you're saying two is all right?
I'm saying if the local political subdivision, if the local political subdivision, you know what we always say.
Not getting the best value out of a taxpayer dollar.
The one court case states that the Fox School District in Jefferson County showed it was more cost effective for them to use this tool.
But there were some problems in the bill passed in 2007.
What were the problems?
Based upon the court case.
What were the problems?
Well, it said state funds.
Yeah, state funds.
So I straighten that out with this bill.
State funds. If it's over 50%, they can't use it.
Well, actually, we need to use public funds because state funds is defined as those funds in control of the state treasurer.
So what state funds is going to determine this?
That was the wrong wording that was put in the bill in 2007.
And have there been any state project labor agreements since the bill was passed?
I believe you said there were two since 2000.
No. Now listen. Two local political subdivisions. A local school district in Jefferson County decided, and a local school district, I believe, in Jackson County decided. There have been no state project labor agreements in the state of Missouri.
As defined by that, you're right.
Okay, you just said there were two. Now you're saying there is none.
You said,
but you want to change the law dealing with state funding when there have been no projects to deal with this in the first place.
I'm changing the law related to public funds now because that is really what the intent was back in 2007.
The intent
to allow
was,
those municipalities, those subdivisions, those political
subdivisions. You don't think they can decide on their own what's best for their local
the
municipalities?
Bids that they can for the taxpayer
dollars. Where did they get the money for the local municipalities? Where did they get the money to build these projects? Did
taxpayers'
they get
dollars.
Yes, the taxpayers in the school districts' dollars.
That's right.
Not
yet,
the state
the
of Missouri.
The way the current law is structured, it allows those school districts or whatever public entity it is to exclude those contractors in that area.
No, it does not allow them to exclude. It allows them to have a hearing if they feel that the use of a tool that is used in the private sector called project labor agreements, I think in the state of Missouri, five or six have been done in the history of the state of Missouri on local projects. Out of over 4,000 projects, five or six have been done because the local entity felt that due to time constraints or possibly finances, that they could best use a tool that is used in the private sector on their project in their local district. Do you believe in local control? Do you believe the state of Missouri should dictate to the school board of Lewis County what they can and cannot do?
They do a lot anyway.
When we're giving them money, for money we're not giving them? Capital projects comes from a local property tax in your community. The state of Missouri does not fund capital projects for school districts. Now, a lot of school districts
taxpayers
in rural Missouri, the taxpayers
and
in that
where
political
they have excluded local contractors.
They're not excluding
because of their
local
affiliation or lack thereof.
They give them a hearing process. Now you keep using the same rhetoric.
That's right, because it's right. It's
What's
been
right?
discriminatory. It's been discriminatory practices used.
They are using
some of these
a tool
And I say one, whether it's one or 100,
sector.
It's not right.
It's
I'm doing
not
this
right.
because I think it's
Did
right.
a lot of the citizens in Fox School District pick up the phone and call you?
The what?
Did a lot of the citizens in the Fox School District pick up the phone and call you?
No.
That made this, did a lot of the citizens in Jackson County School District there pick up the phone and call you and say this is a very important issue we need to decide on?
There's been a lot of people in Jackson County, for instance, as I have done the reading, that were excluded from bidding on that contract.
They were not excluded from bidding. You can't exclude anybody from bidding. Now, what we use is tools in the private sector all the time. We always get up here on the Senate floor and say, we need to be like a business. And this is just a tool that the state of Missouri back in 2007 created more hurdles that the public political subdivisions have to jump through to be allowed to use a tool in the private sector. Now, do you know the reasons the Fox School District, after they had their public hearing, chose to do a project labor agreement?
They had a public hearing. Well, a lot of them don't do that.
Who don't do that? You have to do that.
If they, well, before the court
I think the senator
did.
From Jackson stated it was a school district in his Senate district during the hearing that they did have the hearing, that one of the entities didn't show up for the hearing and was frustrated. But, you know, that happens all the time in Jeff City. You post a hearing, supposedly 24 hours notice, but actually you post a hearing 12 hours notice. It's the next day. You post it at 4 o'clock. The hearing's at 8 o'clock the next morning. So, you know, that gets frustrating, too, being in the minority, but you just go with the flow. But what did they do wrong in these two issues that went to court and they challenged them and the court said it's legal how the political subdivisions handled it, plus the fact the group that you're doing this for, well, first off, that, who are you doing this for?
You know, the court
said
that because it was
interest?
Related to the statute relates to state funds and it wasn't state funds.
Yeah, it was local
so,
funds.
Therefore, that was the main, as I read the court case, one of the main reasons that it was this.
We knew it was state funds when we passed the law.
We need this change to public funds.
We knew it was state funds when we passed the law. What the reasoning behind creating the hurdles they have to go through is that if the local taxpayer elects a local board, and that local board puts before the voters a capital improvement property tax increase, that local board is responsive to the electorate that's paying for it. Now you want to come in and tell that local board, even though we're not giving you any of the money, and these are the issues you bring forth, that you can't do it this way.
You don't think taxpayers want the most out of their dollar, the best
bids?
That's
why in the court case that was brought forth, it was validated because they brought forth the savings with how they researched it and the contractors bringing forth the savings.
The court
that they
case
would use
actually
this
said tool. It didn't apply because it wasn't state funds, it was local funds.
And that's how the bill was drafted, and that's what we all agreed upon. Because we wanted to still give the local political entities the ability to do what they felt best was good for their region, was good for their local school board.
I think if you visited with the people in my county or around my district, the taxpayers would say they want the best deal.
Okay. Have any of these gone on in your county or the taxpayers around your people? Has this been thrown upon them?
Has what?
Have your people had any project labor agreements to their school districts up there?
They haven't had, but why should we allow that if the taxpayers
well,
want the best
Well, that's up to your local
political...
Don't you think your local elected officials can make decisions, educated decisions? Do you...
Why should we burden them with that? With the opportunity...
Why should we burden elected officials with decisions?
To get the best
Why should
our
we allow elected officials to make decisions?
No, no. Why should we allow
elected officials to make decisions?
Why should we allow our taxpayers to be burdened with the challenge of not getting the best deal for their dollar?
Why should we allow elected officials to make decisions to get the best bang for our tax dollars? Okay, we're doing that. Why do you want to take away a tool that they can use?
If discriminatory practices are a tool that can be used, why should we allow that?
Well, let's go a step further. If you're worried about discriminatory practices, then let's put in there you can't have any change orders once a construction project starts. That's a discriminatory practice.
Have you got that amendment?
Have I got that amendment? We'll work on that one. Disallowing change orders in all construction projects by taxpayer dollars. Yeah, we'll do that one. See, do you know how that works? You don't want to know?
That's not in my bill right now.
Well, I'll tell you how it works. See, what happens is these contractors bid jobs.
Oh, I know.
And they find out the responsible contractor, and they underbid them by cutting things out, and then after they get awarded the project and they're doing the work on the project, they go to the school board or the person running it for the school board and say, oh, we need to make a change order. We didn't know this was going to happen. Then they do a change order to bring the equipment or the hours it's going to take to install the special equipment they so loosely forgot about, and that's how they up their bid. They get it, but then they do the change orders. So we would not allow any change orders whatsoever to stop that abuse of the taxpayers, because the taxpayers always get hit with that. But we got a lot of issues facing us, don't we? How about the $189 million? Did you get a call from any of your superintendents about that money in the budget bill, House Bill 15?
No, I haven't gotten any calls.
You haven't received any calls?
Mm-mm.
I have three superintendents that called me over spring break about that issue. That's money that the federal government has given, and we're not debating that issue.
I visit with my school superintendents. They didn't have to call me.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I wish I had time to go visit superintendents, but I try to make it their time to come visit me. Because
well, it's
sometime,
been a practice I've always done when
well,
I served in
the House.
Well,
that's good. You're a responsible senator. So what's your feelings on that bill? That's 189. How much money is that going to affect your school district? If
yeah,
we
well,
don't
I've
pass...
got several school districts, Senator.
Okay, how will that have a negative impact if we don't pass that bill on those school districts?
Well, I would imagine. What would you think?
I wonder why we're not even taking that issue up yet. It's been over here for the last month.
I'm not
That's
holding
not
it back.
But this is the pushing issue here. Two projects in the last 4 years, the local political subdivisions have followed the law that we have certain people that are against it.
It was a flaw.
How do we go about making sure contractors don't employ illegals?
Whether it's two or it's 100, if it's discriminatory practices, that doesn't make it right.
No, but the same thing, let's go a step further. We have all these bills we're passing right now. I think it was in the Speaker of the House's State of the General Assembly speech, I guess they call it, about illegals. And one of the bills is you can take your driver's test in English only. Isn't that one of the bills?
I'm in the Senate now.
And I guess we're trying to deal with, because we're frustrated with all the illegals, which I agree with. I'm frustrated with the illegals. Are we doing anything to the businesses that employ these people, though, in the state of Missouri?
I believe we passed a bill a couple of years ago that put some more teeth into that.
Who are some of the individuals that want this legislation passed that have come to you?
I believe there's several people.
One of the witnesses was the ABC, Associated Builders and Contractors. How about one of their members, a Greg Holbrook? Has he come and visited you about this issue or his lobbyist?
Well, I would imagine he has, yes.
He has? Mm-hmm. He has visited you about this project.
I've talked to several people that are in favor of changes in this law.
Did you know just last month in the Springfield News Leader, HTH, which Mr. Holbrook owns, which has visited you, was hit with an investigation over the status of workers, and I quote, use of illegal workers by a subcontractor suspected at the Guard Depot in Springfield regarding HTH companies. A state National Guard project had illegals, and they're currently under investigation for HTH construction. It was in the Springfield News Leader, and he's one of the ones that came to talk to you about this piece of legislation, right?
I have talked with several people about this.
Right, you just said that. He came and talked to you about it. And we want to make sure the taxpayers taken care of, but we also want to make sure that we protect those contractors that employ the illegals that we're currently trying to make sure they have to learn English to take the Missouri driver's test. Let's see here. Give you another example of some of the things, you know, this is a major issue we're dealing with, of course. But also in February in another state, so you know, federal immigration agents raided the $600 million VA hospital construction site in Orlando, Florida, and were able to detain 9 undocumented workers on the site. So we have a facility with state taxpayer dollars that a contractor that has come talk to you about this legislation is accused, and it was reported in the Springfield News Leader, of having undocumented workers on the job site. Here's another one in Florida of undocumented workers. So we're worried about making sure
I'm worried about illegals practices in the bidding
have
process.
To learn English to get a driver's license, but the same contractors that are pushing to change the law that has dealt with two.
So school are districts you saying have chosen, that it's all right?
I'm saying it's up to the local school district. If
so
they want to use a
it's
tool
all right
that the private
the taxpayers
sector,
aren't getting the fair value out of their dollar.
Why are you saying they're not getting the fair value of their dollar? That's hearsay. That's your opinion. What's the opinion of the local political subdivision board saying, I'm getting the best bang for the taxpayer dollar? It is them that put the issue to the voters to increase their local property tax. It is those elected officials that took the political heat to put an issue to the vote of the people to raise their property taxes to do infrastructure improvements to their school district. Now, you don't think after an elected official puts something to the vote of the people to raise their taxes, they're not worried about what's best for the taxpayer? Don't you think they're worried to make sure that the best interest of the taxpayer is first and foremost? Because they're the ones that had the political courage to
put
the issue.
I think we looked at these issues and we've seen discriminatory practices going on there.
It's not a discriminatory practice. They, all these contractors,
most certainly.
The reason I have to stand up here and talk this issue to death because last week or 2 weeks ago, I got up and talked to a very conservative Senate legislature and said, you know, we got a fiscal note on a bill of unknown of general revenue dollars. And all these people that love to say, I'm worried about the taxpayers' dollars, which you did in a little bill is the exact same thing the federal government did, and we had to bail out with the taxpayer money.
I don't
you
think
had
you
an
understood
unknown,
that bill at all,
Senator,
sir.
You had an unknown fiscal note. So I stood up and tried to explain to them all, this isn't good public policy. This is what we're screaming. And only 7, myself and 6 of my Republican colleagues, voted against it. So, you know, nobody's standing up questioning these ideas of the few, saying it's a good idea. In this argument, I have stated that we currently have laws that local political subdivisions, if they want to use a project labor agreement, which is a tool in the construction industry that the private sector is able to use, but if the public sector wants to use it, they have to go through about 7 hurdles for them to use it. But if that local political subdivision feels it's in the best interest, and the Fox School District and Jeff County felt it was in the best interest, the contractors that did not get the bid took them to court, and the courts ruled that the local school board did everything the state law demands of them. But the same contractors that are upset asking you are also the contractors that got caught with illegals on a state project in Springfield, Missouri. So 2 projects out of over 4,000 political subdivisions in the state of Missouri. Not too many local political subdivision
boards.
So you're
still saying that the discriminatory practices used in those 2 cases.
I am not saying they're discriminatory. They can bid on those jobs as well under
I
that project
there was
labor
some emails went
it's
out
the same,
that said unless
it's the same
it's a
difference.
Only
Do you
contract.
Think it's right that a public school board can say to a contractor, you can only do this construction between 10 o'clock at night and 6 in the morning? Can they do that so they don't disrupt school policy? Can they?
I'm sorry.
Public entities do things in contracts all the time, just like the private sector, determining when you can work on a project so you don't disrupt the school year. Go in at work at 10 o'clock at night and quit at 6 in the morning so you don't, the hammers aren't making noise to disrupt the classroom time. They do that all the time. Here you have one school district, 2 that did it, but one school district that got challenged in court to use a tool that the private sector is using. And they go to court, and the court says you've done everything right, and they feel this was most...
So you think the local should be able to control all of this?
It's their money.
Okay, what about allowing the locals to determine the local prevailing wage?
They can do that already.
Oh, really?
Yeah. All you got to do is the contractors turn in their hours and...
No.
They do it.
No.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
how it works.
When they set it up. On that bid, they provide what that prevailing wage will be for that job.
It's determined by the local county contractors that turn in their bids and their hours.
And what if you have a county that maybe hasn't had any of that work
then
done?
Then just go to the county next door.
3 or 4 years.
Go to the county next door.
Yeah, and if
go ahead and do that.
Bumps clear down to where those prevailing
go
wages.
To any of the surrounding counties.
Okay, now wait a minute.
Go to any of them.
You say go to the next county, but earlier you just said that maybe they should be allowed to use that authority of that local control. To set
well, the prevailing wage. Rate.
The chair would like to ask for unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests, and pardon the interruption in the debate. Here
Take
from.
All-
Hearing none, chair shall proceed. Here on my right and to your left in the chamber here are 3 constituents of mine are up here visiting. Ann Mangelsdorf, Julie Backer, and Kate Hediger are here from Webster Groves and Kirkwood and Webster Groves respectively, and would ask that everybody in the Missouri Senate make them feel welcome as they join us today in the Senate. Senator from the 13th. Senator from the 13th.
To and continue my inquiry.
Proceed.
You were talking about prevailing wage. That is a state law to set up the wage rates.
Okay,
of
what if
counties.
We change the state law right now, if I would drop an amendment to this, to allow those locals to set their own prevailing wage in those counties?
Well, they can through the state right now on all construction. It's an issue that's been going on since 1960.
What if we change state law right now? We could drop an amendment to that.
You can already set those wage rates through your county contractors. You
so,
can already do that.
You'd be all right with that, I guess.
You can already
you
do
vote
it.
On?
We don't need to change
would
it.
You vote
you can
yes
already
on it?
Do it. It's already in the state law.
You just told me if it hadn't been
no,
done.
No, what I told you is there is a tool. There is a tool that is used in the private sector that was made illegal in a federal court case in 1959 that the public sector can use this tool as well. Okay? And since we made this a big issue back in 2007 and said you can't do PLAs on state construction projects, but local political subdivisions, if you still want to do it, you got to go through these hurdles. Since that time, only two have done that. Only two.
Well, you're back and, to prevailing or to PLAs now.
Yeah, because you wanted to bring up that issue, and I'm saying, no, we're talking about this issue that allows the private market to use a tool that the public market can use after they go through hurdles that has been proven in court cases, and you say, we didn't know what we were doing in 2007. We knew exactly what we were doing in 2007. We wanted to make sure that local political subdivisions had that right if they went through the hurdles. Now, some of the people you have told me that want this are also the same ones that got caught with the illegals and they're under investigation on a project down in Springfield.
I don't know anything about it.
Pushing issues. We got 20 co-sponsors on a nuclear power plant bill that will create jobs. You got five co-sponsors to deal with an issue that has transpired over two public bodies
so you're
in the last
their right to discriminate?
4 years.
Is that what you're saying?
They don't discriminate. Everybody's got the right to bid. You can't
discriminate.
Now, there
were some emails that went out that it had
to be union
only.
I can't beat my head against the brick wall anymore. They're not discriminating. I don't know what you want me to say.
That's not discrimination?
No, it's discrimination because you sit there and you listen to these people that employ illegals on a job down in Springfield telling you
it's
discrimination.
You're telling me to limit the ones that can bid on a project is not discrimination?
They're not limiting them. They can...
There was email went out.
Senator, I don't know what else I can say.
Well,
you can't
I
stop
either.
Somebody from bidding on a construction project. You're not limiting them, okay? It's illegal. You can't limit them. But I can't continue to get that point across. So I'm not it's kind of like sometimes you can't change somebody's mind. You give up on that point. They're not discriminating. You can't. It's under federal law. I can't change that mind because the people, like you said, one of the contractors that brought this issue to you, once again, that I want to remind, got caught with illegals on a National Guard, our state militia facility, had illegals on it. When we have all our Missourians unemployed, this contractor gets caught with illegals, and he's under investigation by the federal government because they caught illegals, but he comes to you and talks to you about this issue that two school districts
used in the
last 5 years.
People that are in favor of the changes on this.
Okay, well, you said one of them was the guy that had these illegals. You told me that on the floor. Greg Holbrock with HDH was one of the ones that came and talked to you or his lobbyists about this issue. And I showed you sometimes people use these PLAs to make sure that they can control too.
What about
that
the prevailing
these contractors
wage?
Don't have illegals on their property.
What about the prevailing wage?
What about the prevailing wage?
Should it be set locally?
Okay. It is set locally. That's under state law currently. The
we
local
can change
county
state law
wage
because
rate.
Because prevailing wage in my area is definitely not what the going
okay,
wage rate
I'll research and find it, but if they submitted their wage rates, that's the wage rate.
Like
it's
I
the
say,
most
in
hours
a lot of my counties.
At
what about
the
Knox County up
rate.
There where there are really no construction projects going on? Maybe for several years in a row where they haven't even had a chance to submit their rates.
Have they done any property tax increases so they could afford to do a construction project?
Sometimes they get grants. Sometimes they do.
They get grants. Where do they get the grants from?
The grants?
The grants?
Wherever they can get them from.
Why? I want to know so I can tell my school district so they quit increasing their my property taxes to build schools that they can get these grants. Because what's your local property tax rate?
You mean for the schools?
Yeah.
$2.42. What's that?
$2.42. You know what my local property tax rate is?
Wait. $3.42.
Okay.
Whatever the
you know what my local property tax rate is with the payoff of bonds for all the new construction we did? It's over $6 for every $100 assessed dollars value of your home. Over $6. So
now, wait a minute.
How much
property
how much
tax,
does your school
you
district
the base
get
rate,
from the
or are you
state?
Talking with bonds on top of that?
No, we have to pay them off with the local property taxes. They increased our property tax to pay off the debt.
They don't do an additional on top of that for bonds?
They increased our property taxes back in 2003 or 2004 to pay off the bonds.
Okay, but you have a base rate there that's set first, and then they add bonds on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Operating and then bonds. Yes.
Ours is higher than, but the base rate is 342.
Oh, our base rate, I believe, is close to $6, if not more, plus the payoff of the bonds. Yes, we increased our base rate in 2003 for the operations of the new school buildings once they're built. What is the rate, the percentage that your school districts are getting from the state? How much of the state general revenue dollars comes to support your local schools?
I've got so many schools. So
I understand that. I understand that in all fairness. Just give me one of them.
I'd have to go look it up because, like I say, they're all different. It's
do you
a very
get
diverse
more,
district.
Do you get more revenues?
That varies from one end of the spectrum to the other.
Do you get more revenues from the state of Missouri to operate your schools or from your local taxpayers?
Local taxpayers.
Your local taxpayers pay the majority of the operation cost of your schools than what you get from the state? I'm asking. I don't know.
I said I would imagine so.
Okay.
Well, now, what about the prevailing wage?
The prevailing wage? Well, that's another one. I'm not
going
to...
Do we have counties like Knox County or Schuyler County?
I'm not going to change your
opinion.
Who
don't have much? Pardon?
I'm not going to change your opinion on discrimination because you cannot stop a contractor from bidding. And I'm not going to change your opinion on how the prevailing wage rate in the state of Missouri is set, because it is set by your local contractor submitting their hours. If none are submitted,
I've got
or construction
counties
is
where they don't have any projects going on because there's
no construction at all in a county, then they go to the closest county surrounding them. But
that's
how,
not local.
I'm
if
sorry.
They have to keep bouncing to another county.
Yeah, to try to get the local region. But I'm not going to change your perspective on that. You're not going to change my perspective on this. I'm not going to change your perspective on out of 4,000 political subdivisions around the state that can do public contracting, two local elected boards decided this was the route they wanted to go.
And they discriminated against some other local contractors
process. You and I aren't going to agree on that because you're saying you're disallowing them and you're not, but these two elected boards said this is a tool they use in the private sector, we want to use in the public sector. And what they did was went to the voters to increase the taxes and then also worried how they spend the money, so they wanted to spend it efficiently and felt by using this tool and going through all the hurdles that this was the best bang for their buck for their taxpayers. So they do that, and we're up here debating this issue because two political subdivisions out of 4,000 said this is the issue we have to deal with today. After the courts have said it's legal, after the private sector uses it to construct things, and after you've told me on the floor one of the contractors that's pushing this that came and talked to you is under federal investigation for having illegals on a state facility, is reported in the Springfield News Leader. So I've given those facts. You're not going to change them. I'm not going to change them. But before you finished with your dissertation, I wanted to inquire you about a few of those facts, of those issues. I'm not going to change your opinion, and I tried. You're not going to change mine because I think in state law you can already do that. So I think we're at a stalemate at this point in time. So one of my colleagues has some amendments that we're going to talk about, so we'll go on to that stage of it. But I wanted to bring those issues up first and foremost before you had a chance to sit down. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire
to be President.
Heard? The senator from the 11th.
Mr. President.
For what reason do you seek recognition?
Mr. President, I wish to inquire of the senator from Lewis.
The senator from Lewis, do you yield to the inquiry from the senator from the 11th?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Now, you know you can't stand and look at me.
I know.
You got to look at the disturbingly tall image of the President Pro Tem up there.
I'm not going to say it's disturbingly.
I actually looked it up. He is the tallest senator we've ever had.
He is tall.
I mean, I think there's atmospheric pressures up there where his head's at. I don't know. One time he was standing over me, and I felt like I was in the bottom of a well.
He's very stately, isn't he?
Yes. But anyway, Senator, I know you have been up for a while, so I don't want to belabor this point, but how can I not belabor? Anyway, one thing I wanted to get to in your actual act was that if you could go to your bill on page 4 and lines 4 through 13, and let me walk you through that. I mean, I know it's your bill, but let me walk through this. You bracketed out section 34217 and replace it with this. Any person submitting a bid or who would have submitted a bid or who would have submitted a bid. I was just curious. I heard your inquiry of the senator from 13th. Did the trial attorneys ask you to put that in there? The Missouri Association of Trial Attorneys, did they ask you to put that in there?
No, but that is a thought that maybe they would have been interested in.
Well, I just see the way that that is worded, that anyone who might have could be anyone, right? Because you're not even defining it as a contractor. You're just saying anybody. So I guess I could file suit, right?
The way it's currently worded, I guess you could.
I mean, I could say, well, I was going to do the electrical work on that school, and I know I didn't submit a bid, and I know I didn't do anything, and I know I'm not an electrician.
Do you know to keep?
And I know I don't know how I'm lucky to be able to turn on a light socket, but I was thinking about submitting a bid on that project because even though I'm none of those things, I just thought that I might submit a bid, so I might file suit because I might have thought I could have, maybe should have, or theoretically, or perhaps could have submitted a bid. So I was just, when I read that in the bill, and as you know, to some of you who are new to the Senate, I didn't ask that in committee. I saved it for the floor. Anyway, I was just curious. I was hoping the senator from 14th was listening. That was a private joke between her and I. But anyway, the history of that is, if you have 146 questions for the mayor of St. Louis about local control, save it for the floor. But but anyway, in committee, ask a couple or five or maximum of 6 questions. Don't ask all 5 pages of questions of the mayor of St. Louis about the local control committee. 6 pages.
Six.
I'm sorry, I was wrong. So, Senator, I wanted to bring up that problem that you see, that could be anybody. And the reason I bring it up is we've done some research, and I wanted to walk through a little bit with this, that one of the cases involves allegations against the St. Charles Ambulance District. That's one of the cases that has happened since 2007.
That's a court case.
Yeah, and I guess what I'm getting is, and I heard this in committee, and I kind of did ask this in committee, a lot of these, in your inquiry of the center from 13th, a lot of these are sort of anecdotes, or I heard, and they said, and da-da-da-da-da, and what I wanted to get to is a lot of the objections to project labor agreements since 2007 have been not based on a court case. So the only court case that we could find, or a couple of the others, involved State versus Rainier Construction versus, oh my, listen to the title of this case, State X Rel Rainier Construction versus Koster et al. I guess he had to be mentioned in the suit because he's the AG. But anyway, that was the case.
This one?
And in the allegations, the St. Louis Charles County Ambulance District, who it's not even clear in the court case, and I have the court case, they didn't even necessarily may not have even done a PLA. And I guess what was interesting is, in that case, and this is why it was dismissed, the court found that Rainier, who was the plaintiff, did not even bother to bid on the project. So I guess what I'm saying is, how are they an aggrieved party? I mean, you see my point. You know, now we're down to people who didn't even bid. They're not even an aggrieved party. They didn't even lose. I mean, it would have been one. I guess you could, I'm walking through you with this with you. If I had bid and I lost and I was maybe the low bidder, in my opinion, I was the best bidder, and the governmental body, da-da-da-da-da, and then I go to court and say, well, I was the best bidder, I was the lowest bidder, their refusal on my bid was illegal, discriminatory, whatever. But the problem is the case that's out there, the contractor didn't even bid. So I guess what I'm saying is, how can they make that claim? If they had bid and lost, I could understand it. But what struck me immediately was, in Rainier versus St. Charles County Ambulance, it's not even clear whether there was a PLA, and they didn't even bid. And I'm honestly just asking, do you see my point?
Yeah, I think they felt that they were discriminated against, and the bidding process was the reason they didn't go through with it. But I do see your point as far as the language in my bill.
But you see, my point is, if we remove that out of your bill, that doesn't solve Rainier's problem. Because they didn't even bid. And if we open up the law to where anybody who can't bid or doesn't bid, again, the way it's phrased, the way whatever, how do you establish who? I mean, imagine what we're doing to local governments with that. Now they have to contemplate with penalties in the law somebody who might not even bid. How do you? How big is that list? 4.3 billion population of the world? You see my point? I mean, that's the
in the court case, it,
you got the right ta-ta, but the wrong ho-ho. I mean, it's just that's the central issue in this case is it's a contractor who didn't even bid. Or subcontractor.
That's because they were asked to certify that they were parties to such agreement, or they were willing to be bound to such an agreement for the district's project. So they felt they were discriminated against, is the way I look at the court.
You and I, Senator, probably agree on immigration, right? You and I probably agree, right?
I think we...
And you and I probably want the state to pass strong restrictions, even apply it to the business community, even though, and this is the dirty little secret in society, the business community doesn't want a lot of those standards applied to them, and that's why we have an immigration problem, among other things. But part of it is the reason that a Republican Congress in Washington and a Democratic Congress and a new Republican Congress in Washington, that's why we've never had an immigration bill, because, at least in my opinion, one of the biggest objectors is the business community. So you and I might see a problem in our state and want to pass responsible restrictions on immigration, but you can only go so far in implying those standards on business. I guess what I'm saying is, let us say that you and I contemplated a tough immigration misclassification of worker standard, and all of a sudden, under that law, a contractor shows up and says, well, you know, this local government passed these restrictions on misclassification on all this, and it's discriminatory. And I didn't even bid, so I'm going to sue now because I'm an aggrieved party, even though I didn't even do it. You see my point? And then let's take another example. You and I are on a school board. We decide, you know, and by the way, this happens, as you know, in the real world. We have to build a new school, and we get bids from people who haven't paid their taxes, and we're on a school board, and we go, you know, they're behind in their taxes, they haven't paid their taxes, they've maybe violated this, that, the other, and but because it wasn't in the bid specs, you know, so you and I decide on the school board, let's put it in the bid specs, let's make everybody pay their taxes, because it makes sense, because we're on a school board, and heck, I'm not going to let some business get a contract with our public tax dollars, the taxpayers' tax dollars, and hand it to them when they haven't even paid their taxes, and I'm sure not going to give them a contract so they can pay their taxes, finally. So we put a provision, and you make a motion on the school board, and I second it, and it passes, and then we go out to bid to build the school, and then all of a sudden, somebody wins the bid who hasn't paid their taxes, and they sue us, and they say, oh, well, it's discriminatory against me because I haven't paid my taxes. And I guess that's the problem that I have, is that's kind of where we're at on the bill. And you and I might disagree, but I'm actually bringing up some real tangible problems in particularly that one sentence, that how do you even determine who that is?
If you, Senator, go to the end of that in 5 and 6, except for the violations of this chapter.
Well, but I read that, but I'm wondering, where's the violations of this chapter? Because how do you even... I mean, somebody has to bid for there to be a violation. Somebody has to win a contract. Something, there has to be an act. And I don't know the Latin term, but there has to be an act.
Senator, have you noticed we went from one of the tallest president pro tems to one of the shortest?
Well, and by the way, we have now in the president's chair a serial rule violator of the Senate rules, which is always of concern. I mean, I have been in the Senate for over 2 years with the President Pro Tem, who's in the chair now, and I think daily he violates Senate rules. Daily. And I sit next to him, so I see it firsthand. And I gave up even attempting to enforce it. But Senator, that's my point. We have language that refers to everybody, Now, one last thing, and I know you have been up for now coming up on an hour. You know, Senator, I know we have an inquiry going on, but I have been alerted by a orange text message that the president pro tem, a serial violator of rules, of Senate rules, on almost a daily basis, has guests. But since he is one of the kindest, warmest, most wonderful people that I've ever met.
He is.
If you don't mind, I will do my inquiry a little bit, and then I'll let you sit down, and then I'll go to my 42 amendments, if you don't mind. But if we could let him do that, that's fine with me if I may inquire. Mr. President.
Senator from the 11th.
I'm inquiring, but do you I have a question for you.
State your inquiry.
Mr. President, do you have guests?
I do. And with no objection, I'd like to introduce two very special guests. They are from Truman State. Today is Truman State Day from Kirksville. And to my left and your right, if you would please stand, we have the president of the student body from St. Louis County. His name is Isaac Robinson. He's a political science major. And we have Isaac Robinson. And to my right and your left is Bailey James. She is a student at Truman State, and she is my constituent. I've seen her grow up, and very talented, wonderful person. So if the body would please welcome Isaac and Bailey to the Senate. And with that, I would like to turn it back over to...
I believe I had the floor, and
absolutely.
If I may continue my inquiry of the Senator from Lewis.
Does the Senator from Lewis continue to yield? He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, over the weekend, I watched one of my favorite movies, Young Frankenstein. And there's a part in there, and I've always identified with one of the characters. Are you familiar with that movie?
No, sir.
You've never seen Young Frankenstein?
I'm sorry. I just work so much, I just don't have time to enjoy those finer things.
There's an Inspector Kemp, who's the policeman in Transylvania. And so Gene Wilder is the young Dr. Frankenstein, because he's changed his name. He doesn't want to go by Frankenstein. And there is a point to all this. I'll get to it. But anyway, Inspector Kemp and the townspeople are nervous that there's this great-grandson of Dr. Frankenstein who's moved back in the castle. And everybody's saying, he's a Frankenstein, he's going to create a monster, you know, and 30 years ago, we had to kill that first Frankenstein monster that came, and we know he's working on it. And so Inspector Kemp goes up there to investigate him and says, you know, we know you're a Frankenstein and you're going to make this monster. And my point of all this is, when I came to the legislature in 2004, there was a monster, a ban on PLAs, making them illegal, blah, 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 blah. For 2.5 years in the legislature, we worked through the process. And I don't know if you were in the House at the time, I assume you were, but over in the Senate, we worked through the process.
I think it was four years.
Just so you know, it predated it's been around for a long time. When I came here in 2004, and then 2005, and then 2006, and then in 2007, we had worked out a compromise, and imagine the difficulty of working out a compromise, but it must have been fair, because here's the people involved. Governor Matt Blunt, the former leadership of the Senate, the House, and over those 2.5, 3 years, we worked out a bill, and do you know what this bill passed the Senate by in 2007?
33-0.
Yes, and actually I didn't note this until I got the journal, and I was shocked to see this, but the person absent was the former senator from the 14th. How shocking that she was not here, but she must have been gone, but it passed 33-0. And that was, and so I guess what I'm saying is, when we went through all those negotiations, let's just say we put affirmative duties on all these local bodies. They had to have a hearing, blah, 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 blah. They had to show cause. And we passed the law, and the governor signed the law, and it passed the Missouri Senate, and it passed the House. And the whole understanding was, we're going to do this for 5 years. So I didn't come to you when I saw the bill filed, but I'm sitting here going, it passed in 2007, didn't become law until August 28, 2007, and 2011 minus 2007 ain't 5 years. And so I know you've got other bills, but understand, and I want you to know, because you and I have worked well together so far in the Senate, and I just want to tell you,
I appreciate
on that. Prevailing wage and PLAs, these are old, ancient issues that we have just spent hours on and vetted compromises. And by the way, as you might imagine, here's my frustration. The PLA bill was supported by ABC contractors. They were at the table negotiating it. And they were supposed to negotiate it for 5 years. So here we are in 11, and they're saying, oh, these have become terrible. And then the senator from 13th says, well, there's been a couple, and there's one court case where somebody didn't even bid. So you see my point. And I wanted to just tell you that that's why there are strong feelings, because, you know, back in 2004 and 5 and 6, I spent a considerable amount of time trying to work out a balance with competing groups that have different interests, with local subdivisions, with a governor of the other party, and trying to find balance. And so when I see 175, that balance is, you know, of trying to consider all the things that go on in construction, that's being disturbed and undone. And, you know, I know some people, when we went through all that, said, let's, you know, try this for 5 years. And here we are in 2011, and we're already doing away with the agreement. So I just wanted to tell you that.
Was brought on by the court case, some of the issues in there, the state funds.
And keep in mind, I'm not going to do this with you, but I mean, part of the compromise was 50% of state funds. A school district, once the state hands their money to a school district, well, first of all, once the state hands their money as part of the formula of the school district, it sort of is their money. I mean, you and I have walked in this Capitol, and what I mean is, I see superintendents, and believe me, they don't think that the money for the formula is our money. Every superintendent I've ever met thinks it's their money, and that they're entitled to it. And so what I mean is,
that's what the court said too.
Yeah, and what I mean is, that was, just so you know, that was contemplated in all of this. That there's, how do you assess a percentage of what becomes a state dollar? You know, and you know, I've heard other discussions on the floor about federal money and all this sort of stuff, and I didn't know that the state had its own currency, and I assume if we do, I want to be on like the $2 bill. So I just, you know, I would be disturbed at the image of some of the people that might be on our state currency.
I don't.
But
know.
I'm just saying, a state dollar, once you hand it to a school district, it's sort of their taxpayers have sent money to Jeff City, and they're getting their educational dollars, and it becomes their dollars. It's no longer, and I think that you might disagree with that, but we talked about that in this whole compromise over a span of 3 years. And the last thing I wanted to kind of tell you, even though I'm kind of inquiring of you, is I want to give you a little bit of history of that, which is we spent all of that time on this issue, and you know, we're revisiting it now, okay? But keep in mind, all of the interests that are part of construction, we're all involved in that. And you would think, and here's my frustration, and Senator, I am not blaming you for this, but if you want to change something, or you think a court has evolved something, or there's some problem that was unanticipated when it passed, you come back to all the parties and you say, look, we worked out a deal 36 months ago. We need to revisit the deal because here's our genuine concern, and people either agree or they disagree with that. And you try to work it out. You know, in the construction industry, you're not going to pass a bill, nor is it responsible to pass a bill that just involves one side of it. And this is a very complicated issue, and that's where I kind of fault the proponents of this bill, not necessarily you, is that, hey, you need to meet with everybody that you just were in a room with 40 months ago and try to work something out if you think that there's some genuine issue. I can tell you that didn't happen. I mean, I thought when I walked in small business one day that I was, you know, listening to a retro FM station, and I was hearing some hit from 5 years ago, because I'm like, oh, where did this come from? But Senator, I'll end my inquiry. You're welcome to respond. I just wanted to give you the history of that's why there's a lot of passion, because a lot of us spent considerable time trying to find a delicate balance. And, you know, the compromise didn't go all one side or one way. And it was agreed to by all the parties. And that's why it passed. And I just want to tell you, that's why it passed 33-0. That's why Governor Blunt signed it. Because, as you know, if you try to find compromise in this body, it's usually rewarded. You know, and that's I wanted to give you the background of that's what's going on here, is that we now have one side that in a room 40 months ago said, okay, is now kind of breaking that.
I appreciate that.
Mr. President, thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Senator from the 11th.
May I inquire of the Senator from 13th?
The Senator from the 13th.
Could I get some coffee?
Do you yield?
Yes.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I don't know if you heard my inquiry of that, but I did want to get to one thing, which was this case, and you mentioned the Fox School District.
It's the wrong school district. I have to stand up on the floor and state that I stated the wrong one. It's the Northwest. But I tell you, the person, when we get through this debate, the senator from Jefferson, because it's his constituency, just like the other school district, I believe, was your constituency?
Correct.
Has a better purview of the superintendent's philosophy, but it was the Northwest School District in Jefferson County. But we can go through that because I have the decision.
Well, I guess our research showed this State versus Rainier Construction versus Koster, and it involved the St. Charles County Ambulance District.
Yeah, I didn't know they did one.
What's that?
I don't think they did one.
Well, but I guess what I'm saying is here was the problem in the case. It was brought by somebody who didn't even bid, and it's not even sure whether there was a PLA. So I guess what I'm saying is you and I spent 3.5 years on this issue bringing a Senate of the other party, a House of the other party, Governor Matt Blunt, all of the interested parties of contractors, subcontractors, and everybody else, over a span of 3.5 years. The bill passed unanimously in 2007. Part of the deal was we were going to try this for 5 years, and you were intimately involved in the negotiations. And I'm not the brightest bulb in the light socket, but 2011 minus August 28, 2007 isn't 5 years. And what I'm trying to get at, and I'll let you respond, is I don't see any case that has advanced this, changed this, altered this significantly to the point where I don't get why we have this bill.
I think, first off, sometimes on some of the issues that you and I debate, we do the good cop, bad cop. I think sometimes I'm the bad cop or good cop, and sometimes
well,
you're
I'm
good
inevitably
cop, bad
always
cop.
The good cop.
Yeah, but I think today with my inquiry of the senator from Lewis, it may have been perceived I was the bad cop today, because I was trying to say, in the overall scheme of things, why are we dealing with this issue, or prevailing wage? You bring a good point that I did not think of. In 2007, after 2005, 2006, and 2007, so it was 3 years of contentious debate on prevailing wage and project labor agreements, we came to an agreement, a tentative agreement in 2006, which then was derailed. And then an agreement early on, I think if you look in the date in the journal, it's like February, isn't it?
February 21st, 2007.
Okay, February 21st of 2007. So that means basically within the first 7 weeks of session, we passed a very contentious bill in what you were stating before with 33 senators agreeing on that compromise. I think the issue of 5 years came into play is let this all get worked out. Let's see how it runs. And in 5 years, all the interested parties that were serving in the Senate will be gone. And if they need to bring the issue up and change it, let it be. But I remember the senator from Buchanan at that time was the floor leader saying, I don't ever want to see the rest of my career PLAs and prevailing wage. We're done with the issue. So that's where we came with this gentleman's agreement of 5 years. Two political subdivisions have used the new law, and as you state, one of the people that took them to court challenged the new law on Bayless School District and St. Charles Ambulance District, two entities that didn't even use a PLA. So you have a bogus challenge to political subdivisions that didn't even use them, and then the two that did use them, Independent School District, I believe, and Northwest School District, were held up that they did everything the new law that we agreed upon February 21st with 33 senators, and it passed overwhelmingly in the House and was signed into law by a Republican governor. And here we are, 3 years later, bringing up this contentious PLA and put prevailing wage with it as well, these issues, because there is a select group of contractors that file lawsuits that they have been violated against, and they didn't even bid the job. Right?
Yes, Senator, let me tell you about the Independent School District, and this came up in committee. I live in that community. By the way, the school district advertised for the public hearing. There was no representative from ABC. Didn't even show up. There was no opposition at the hearing. Now, the witness in committee said, oh, well, it was in the ad section of the newspaper, and we missed it, and it was a small ad. And again, I mean, we've heard that before. I guess it's supposed to be a full-page ad, even though the statute doesn't say that. I guess they're supposed to personally call everybody who might bid on it from here to China. And so the point is, it's what we find in this body oftentimes out here in the legislative process. The lobbyists didn't do their job. The lobbyists messed up. The advocate for ABC didn't go to the hearing. It's not like the school district didn't have a hearing. They had a quick hearing, from what I understand, because only the proponent showed up. There were no opponents. And just like here, when there aren't any opponents to a bill. Now, we go through that all the time where nobody shows up to testify against it. And then they try to grab us as we walk in the door, and I always immediately say, did you testify against the bill? It's been on the calendar for 3 weeks. Were you going to think about sort of maybe talking to me if you had some objections about it? Or are you going to come in here? And there's a variety of people in the wildlife that is in the Capitol that do that they wait until the bill is that. I had a new one this year, not to digress. I actually had someone lobby me about how bad a bill was the day after it was perfected. So I guess I'm just saying, in Independence, I'm aware of the facts. The representatives that might have an objection, however, here's my point, Senator. I don't know why they would have an objection. I was in a room 40 months ago with them where they agreed to do this for 5 years. So I don't know why they're filing suits. I don't know why they're doing that, because they sat in a room and said this is okay, and that's why it passed 33-0, and that's why it was signed by Governor Blunt.
It's a good point. And if our colleagues would just take a moment to digest the conversation we're having. It's kind of like that the child you have that's always has an excuse of why it's not my fault. The same thing for this small group of individuals that we worked over 3 years to come up with a solution that did not benefit the people we were defending, did not overly benefit the other side, but said, we're going to make it more difficult to do these PLAs so that if a local political entity does it,
I got it,
they're going to have to go through a lot of hoops. And there's going to have to be an explanation to the taxpayer of why this benefits them. Since that time, less than a little over 3 years and 1 month later, when we agreed to a 5-year, let's see it work, two political subdivisions did it. And they were sued in court. And you're telling me the one in Kansas City, they didn't even show up for the hearing to say why they
Independence.
Shouldn't. Independence. So they didn't even show up. So they agreed to the rules in the state statute, and now they don't even show up.
Senator, you were in that room, and you did a lot of negotiating while I was out here on the floor in one of these sessions, and you came in later. I'm just saying in 2006. Now, I read some letters in the last couple of months that I guess a bunch of other people got that compromise done. But anyway, I won't digress.
There's a lot of people that take a lot of credit for a lot of things. My grandfather used to always say it's the people that aren't in the press or getting the accolades are the ones that always do the work. But
well, my memory is that it was largely in the ominous days of 2005 with a governor of the other party and a legislature of majority of the other party that, you know, if it wasn't fair, you know, the little senator from the 11th and the little senator from the 13th wouldn't have been able to hold off all of that. So we spent 2 years working through and all the interests. I guess what I'm saying is, not only is this a case of that they agreed to it, if you're going to change it, my point with the senator from Lewis was, bring all those parties back and say, here's a problem. And the other part I don't understand is what you allude to is, if there were suddenly hundreds of project labor agreements since the passage in 2007, they might have a point of merit, that there might be a reason to change maybe part of it if you go out all the bodies back. But two, and by the way, the process that we put in place, it's not easy to do this. And it shouldn't be. And I think that was our point. It makes sense. It makes sense to a district to allow, I mean, keep in mind, if you build a power plant, if you build a stadium, if you build something that involves boilermakers, plumbers, electricians, all this complicated stuff, you want it to go as effective as possible in a cost-effective way. That's why PLAs are used all the time on major construction projects in the private sector. Why wouldn't you want your governmental body to be able to say, you know, if we do this, we're probably going to save money, we're going to get it done on time, and we want this option, and in order to get this option, we're going to have a public hearing, we're going to have to vote on it, we're going to have to go through all those things.
I think the former senator from Cass said it best, because when he was a prosecuting attorney, they did it on a courthouse there. Why do you want to take a tool that is used in the private sector out of the toolbox when it comes to the use in a public sector? Why would you want to take that option out of there? Leave it there and let them go about their business.
Well, I mean, you alluded to this in your inquiry with the senator from Lewis. You were talking about budgetary mimes, but we always talk about how government should be more like private business.
Oh, yeah.
Well, PLAs is an example where we are, which is that you can sit down, If you have a major construction project, you can decide whether this makes sense or this doesn't make sense, and whether it makes economic sense, whether it makes sense in the time frame of your construction project. And it doesn't really happen that often because all of those dimensions have to be in place, and there has to be a need to satisfy that is unique to a PLA. That's all that's going on.
I agree. And it shows some of the integrity of some of those interest groups. Here we are 3 years later in 1 month, debating an issue that we had a gentleman's agreement we would let operate for 5 years. And one of those individuals was stated by the senator that has come forth with frustrations, just is under investigation right now of having illegals on a state-funded project
well,
in Springfield.
You have been on buildings and put electricity in buildings in your life.
Yes,
that's
I
what
have.
You do. And I guess what I'm saying, the other part is, you and I probably agree on immigration issues, largely.
Yes.
You know, you and the former senator from Cass and I all filed a bill, as I remember. And we always have this dispute about to what extent can we try to deal with immigration
jail
by, and to what extent does government tell business what they can and can't do. Now, what I walked through with the senator from Lewis is a contingency of, what if a school board decided we want on our construction projects to pass a very strict immigration requirement on our contractors, on our subcontractors, and maybe just because it makes sense, maybe we ought to put requirements that anybody who bids on this project should pay their taxes, should pay their workers' comp, should pay all the basics. And even if you wanted to extend it to make sure their employees get the money that we're paying the contractor, all of those issues. And under the Senator from Lewis's bill, using the criteria of the lawsuit that's been filed, I don't even have to bid to bring a lawsuit against that. I could say, I'm whoever, and I haven't paid my taxes, and I've gone down and brought in illegal guest workers, and here I am, and I'm going to sue you in court because, you know, those sorts of requirements you have no authority to do, and the state had no authority to convey that power to you. How responsible would that be? I mean, we're in a school district. We're on a school board. We want to make sure that the contractor pays taxes to our entity or has paid their taxes. So we pass a requirement in before we build that elementary school. Under the Senator from Lewis's bill, in theory, I could say, well, I didn't even bid, but I don't like that. You know, I ought to be able to bring in as many guest workers as possible. I ought to be able to hire as many illegal, undocumented workers as possible. Because the state has no power to convey to a local government, or whether it be a school district or a city, the right to say no. That's what it appears to me is the heart of this bill.
The heart of this bill, in my opinion, is just a certain select group of special interest wanting to change the law to benefit them instead of keeping it open and up to the local public entities of how to go about their business. Let's go back to the phrase, to do capital projects, whether it's fire district, county government, municipal government, or school district. There have been times in the 90s when these school districts, especially in poor communities of the state, came up and said, we want some of this money to build school buildings in our area. And the state said, no, we collect taxes to help subsidize you to operate your schools. But when it comes to building buildings, that's up to your local taxpayers. Now, you get these local entities that go to the vote of their people, campaign very hard to get the local taxpayer to agree to increase their taxes to build more schools or new schools, and they pass it. And then to be fiscally responsible, They want to use a tool the private sector uses. And they have to go through these hurdles to use that tool. And we sit here and say, no, you two school districts that use the tool to benefit your taxpayers can't use that tool. And it just doesn't relate to the PLAs against, it's the prevailing wage. It's the whole realm that we're spending this time on. We have yet to debate the nuclear power plant issue, which will create jobs. We have yet to debate tax credit issues, which had an interim study group. We're still waiting to debate a supplemental bill that deals with roughly $189 million. We got three big issues right there and plenty more with 7 weeks left. And we're taking our time to deal with an issue we dealt with for 3 years, come an agreement with, and then 3 years later, after it was kind of agreed, we're going to wait 5 years and let's see how it works. This group's up here trying to change it again.
Well, they're not just trying to, Senator, not just trying to change it, they're trying to do away with it. I mean, that's where I don't understand. I mean, it's just, it's total bad faith. And, you know, I mean, again, imagine the complicated process that we had to go through, being members of the minority party, to craft a compromise. The agreement itself on PLAs didn't go our way. We had people from our side of the aisle saying this was, you know, terrible and all this sort of stuff. You know, but there's a fairness element to it. And I wanted to touch on one point. In the committee hearing, a school superintendent, and I heard the senator from Lewis talk about this whole thing, and I need to understand, and you're a former budget chair of the House. You're on appropriations here. Am I right? And by the way, the court agreed with me. But when we were in the negotiations on this bill, we discussed the whole contingency of if a school district gets the money that is theirs as part of the education formula, that is unlike a state grant, which the language refers to, right? And we have a ban on state PLAs. And I guess what I'm trying to delineate, are they making the argument, because they apparently have in court, and you talked about this issue with the senator from Lewis, are they making the argument that because the state sends school district formula money to a school district, that's state funds? It starts out as state funds, but it's sort of the school district's money, isn't it?
What they are doing is, like I just stated, you get subsidies from the state through the school foundation formula. Those revenues are generated with this so-called general revenue dollars. General revenue dollars has two sources, the state income tax and the state sales tax. I think back in 2008 or 7, fiscal years get confusing. It was roughly, general revenue dollars was about $8.2 billion. They're down to about $6.7 billion due to the economy. But those dollars go into a foundation formula, which is just like, to me, a manufacturing plant. It's all the raw materials is the money. It churns through a formula, and it spits out a dollar amount for each school district after it goes through this formula. Those monies can solely be used for the operations of the school district. So those state monies can only be used. When you do a capital project like you did in Independence School District, they did a bond issue, they did a property tax increase, or they paid off some bonds, and there was revenue on their levy that they could go ahead and issue new ones for construction without increasing the tax rate, just increase more debt and to pay off that debt. Those dollars that your local taxpayers pay for is used for the construction and expansion of school districts. They're trying to state public funds to be those local property taxes that your constituents pay for the maintenance, upkeep, and expansion of their facilities into the definition of state funds so that you can disallow any local property tax money being used for a construction project under the auspices of a PLA.
Senator, am I right, though, that don't when I send my money to Jeff City or Washington, sometimes it's their money for a while, but it's kind of my money, isn't it? I mean, I guess what I'm saying is the reason we have an education school funding formula is because it's really that those taxpayers in that school district's money, right?
Well, actually, if you look, and while my staff is waiting, I'd like to know the property tax rates of Ferguson, Florissant, Hazelwood, Jennings, and Riverview Gardens. Those are the school districts in my district. But actually, your school district and my school district, kind of along the argument yesterday between the senator from St. Louis, the two senators from St. Louis County, is in the urban area, we kind of put more money in the bank in Jeff City, and we get less money out. So your tax dollars and your constituents' tax dollars, as well as mine, they put this money up here in Jefferson City, and Jeff City says, thank you, but you're only going to get 45 cents on the dollars you invested back. My school district of Hazelwood, now this was several years ago, generates the operation of the school district, besides the property tax rate for capital projects, about 65% of their revenues to operate their school district comes from a local property tax. 45% of their revenues comes from the state of Missouri. So a lot of the money that my constituents pay for that comes up to Jeff City, I don't get it all back. They go to help the school districts in Lewis County. So my taxpayer dollars, everyone likes to beat up on the big urban areas, Kansas City and St. Louis, but we generate the resources into Jeff City.
We're donor states.
So yeah, that we subsidize rural Missouri in their operations. So we are the donors, our constituents are the donors, to make the state a better place to live, in a better opportunity. But I tell you what, we always get beat up on being the big city people, always wanting all that money. When the St. Louis metropolitan area, when you include Jefferson, St. Charles, now Franklin, in Warren, you know, we generate about 46% of the revenues that come into the state. Throw in Kansas City area, Jackson County, Clay County, put another 20% to 30% on top of that, you're getting close to 70% of the revenues generated to operate state government come from the urban corridors. But we're always the big-time people that we're the greedy ones. So these dollars go to help these school districts in rural Missouri that need the help. You don't see me up here badgering that, but they want to tell us, we'll take your money, but we also want to tell you how to run your school district back home. When sometimes I used to joke, the St. Louis metropolitan area, if it seceded from the state, we probably have better resources to bring economic development into the region, probably have better health care for our citizens, because we would be selfish in keeping the money for ourselves. So,
well, you can't run a state that way. You can't
You can't. And you don't want to be selfish, but you get frustrated when you sit there and see the economic engines always being attacked when they're trying to get revenues to operate things. But
well, I wanted one point I wanted to also raise with you. This whole issue of state money, the 50% on state monies, I seem to recall in this agreement that we reached that was supposed to last for 5 years, and I guess all that's gone now. But for just sake of argument, I guess, also in the agreement, we dealt very specifically with this. This means state construction. This means a DNR grant. This does not mean the foundation formula money that is owed to a school district anyway.
No, it does.
Part of, Yeah. But what I mean is, I'm just saying, we dealt with this, this whole issue that, an outright state grant from the DNR, you can't use a PLA, right?
Right. You can't. It's a no-no.
But on a formula, how do you determine which dollar is...
I was told when we
How do you determine which dollar came from the property tax and which dollar came from Jeff City and...
Well, your local school districts have controllers. They get the revenues. I'm going to use St. Louis County because that's where I represent. But the St. Louis County collector of revenue collects all those taxes, those property taxes. When you pay your yearly property tax bill for your home and then your personal property tax bill for your cars or any other things you pay personal property tax on, that goes to the collector of revenue in St. Louis County. And that collector of revenue says, okay, out of every dollar you bring in, just like we do with the state on our yearly surveys, so much of this is going to go for your local school district because this is their tax rate. So much of this dollar is going to go to your fire district. So much is going to go to operate your county government. So basically, the collector of revenue in the county collects the money for the school districts and then ships a check to the local school districts or the local fire districts and says, this is your cut from your property taxes. Then that school district takes that money, and if it's for their bond issue on capital, they'll probably get two different, one lump sum check or two checks from St. Louis County and saying, this much is for the bond issue you passed on this date to pay off this bond, to pay this debt down for this construction. This is for your operations. So they get this check from St. Louis County Collector of Revenue to pay for their expenses. Those dollars is what the senator from Lewis is trying to dictate how they handle.
Senator, if you don't mind, I'm going to, hello? Hey, Senator.
Continue to talk, but I think we're going to be briefly interrupted by the senator from the first during our inquiry.
Does he have gas?
He has gas.
Oh, well, that's great.
Kind of like The Price is Right. Come on down. So I'm just waiting for the president pro tem to recognize the senator from the first.
Three senators standing. The senator from the first, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. If I could get unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests that are in the chamber with us.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Visiting today on Missouri Aviation Day are, make sure I got my right copy here, are Lieutenant Colonel Randy Fuller, Lieutenant Colonel David Miller, and Cadet Second Lieutenant Stephen Couture. They're over here on my left and your right, Mr. President. On behalf of the Missouri Senate, I'm presenting a resolution honoring the Civil Air Patrol today. Is their 70th anniversary of service to our country. The Civil Air Patrol was created in 1941 to assist the Army Air Corps in patrolling the coastal waters in search of enemy submarines. The Civil Air Patrol, who are all volunteers, have added the cadet program and the aerospace education to their many duties. The patrol also provides emergency services, including search and rescue missions for disaster assistance. On behalf of the Missouri Senate and all of us here today in the gallery, I'd like the body to make them feel welcome, Mr. President. One other note, of the 34 senators, I believe 25 of them are actually volunteers in the Corps, right? Members of the Civil Air Patrol. So some of our colleagues have not yet had that luxury and that honor to be part of that. So I would encourage our colleagues, Mr. President, to check into that.
Let's welcome the guests of the Senator from the First. Thank you so much for coming to the Senate. Senator from the 11th.
I believe I was inquiring the Senator from 13th.
You have the floor.
No, that's
Senator,
proceed.
I'm going to... Here, thank you, Mr. President. Here's what I'm going to do, Senator. I'm going to probably end my inquiry.
Can
I inquire of the senator from the 4th?
Okay.
And then I'm going to get to an amendment, and then I probably will re-inquire of you because it's an area that you and I have both worked on the amendment.
Can I just give a few facts because I hate...
You're not going to talk about Oklahoma again, are you?
No. Not talking about Oklahoma. For the senator from Lewis, while he's in the chamber, he can listen to this too, but... My school district is tax rate on local property tax, Hazelwood, where I live, is $6.20 for every $100 assessed value. That is just operating. When he had stated his school district, I believe, was $3.40. So basically, $2.80 more my constituents pay for that. They don't... Mind, when it comes to local control, our school districts increase in the tax rate of our people, which lessens the burden on the foundation formula as well. But thank you for your inquiry.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 11th.
I have an amendment. It has been distributed for the body's benefit. It is 13S. I would move for the adoption of the, or it has been distributed, so I ask that the reading be waived.
Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived.
Mr. President, this is 13S for the body's benefit. I would move the adoption of the amendment. Mr. President, under explanation, this is no public body shall enter into a public works contract as that has been in violation of misclassification of workers in the last 5 years. Mr. President, if I might inquire of the senator from the 4th.
The senator from the 11th has moved the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1, and he is asking for an inquiry from the senator from the 4th. Senator from Stoddard is seeking recognition. For a purpose, do you rise?
I was going to ask to inquire of the senator from the 11th, but apparently you've already recognized another senator for that. So,
okay, Senator.
I'll sit.
Okay, thank you, Senator from the 4th. Do you yield to the inquiry from the senator from the 11th?
Yes, I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, I will probably inquire of you briefly, and then I will probably inquire of the senator from Stoddard, if that's okay, if he wanted to inquire of me. He's not paying any attention to what I'm saying, so I'll just go ahead. But anyway, I'll do my inquiry. I'll inquire of you briefly and then inquire of the senator from Stoddard to save him the effort, because he probably has a whole bunch of other issues he needs to work on today. Anyway, Senator, the point I wanted to get at was what I brought up with the senator from Lewis. Now, I have an amendment because it appears to me that it's very reasonable if you and I were on a school board and we wanted to make sure that somebody paid their taxes, that somebody wasn't a lawbreaker, that we had some ability to deny that contractor, right?
Yeah, I agree.
In the pre-bid process.
Yep.
Now, I'm enlisting your keen legal mind. On page 4 of the bill, and I went over this with the senator from Lewis, lines 4 through 13. Person submitting a bid or who would have submitted a bid shall have standing to seek equitable relief on monetary damages in a court of competent jurisdiction for monetary losses. Now, what I wanted to get at is that could be anybody, couldn't it?
Pretty much so, yes.
I mean, and I guess what I wanted to bring up with you is the only case that really deals with this issue is the one that I brought up, State X Rel Rainier Construction versus Koster et al. And in that case, Senator, the person was bringing suit and they didn't even bid. It wasn't a case where they lost a bid. It wasn't a case where they thought it was unfair. They didn't even bid. They could have bid. By the way, it wasn't even a case of a project labor agreement. May or may not have been. I mean, so I could understand it more if somebody had said, okay, I bid, I lost, I thought the bidding procedure was unfair, that happens in government every day. We don't even have an act here.
There's no damages. You're right.
I mean, is there a Latin term? What I want to get to, I was searching for it later, and I thought I would get some neatly colored text message here on the floor. There's got to be a Latin term. It's not habeas corpus, but doesn't there have to be an ax? What's mens rea? What's that? Oh, mens rea. Okay, that's okay.
That's what you're thinking.
I wish I had my Latin dictionary out, but
yeah.
There's no act here. All related to habeas corpus. There's no body here. I mean, there's nothing here. It's.
Let me point out, the correct word is not habeas corpus either. You don't need to use that anymore.
What is it?
What is habeas corpus?
Yeah. You said don't use it anymore.
Well, it has nothing to do with PLAs.
Well, I'm saying it sort of does. There's not even a body. I mean, I'm just saying there's no body. There's no act. Nothing happened. I'm mad because I read about this contractual procedure. I mean, imagine if we opened that up to stuff we do all the time in this. I didn't like what the state legislature did. I read it in the paper this morning. St. Louis Post-Dispatch editorialized against it. I'm going to file suit. It doesn't affect me, but I'm mad about it. And I didn't even take part, and nothing in it did it. So I guess what I'm saying is, am I right in reading that's, how do you even, if you're a school district, a city, a county, how do you even determine who might have bid? Well, if you don't even have the basic that they had to bid.
I couldn't agree with you more. And if you read that even further, who would have submitted a bid except for violations of this chapter? Now,
yeah, but I don't think the violation part helps it, does it?
It doesn't help it at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's how do you determine that if I'm a school district, how do I determine who might have bid? I mean, there's normal procedures where I list the project and I notify groups of whatever, and I advertise in the paper, we need to build an elementary school, we need to build a building, and given the market, that's people bid. Now, how do I even determine somebody who didn't bid or might have bid? I mean, I kind of get my answer when I go through the bid procedure, don't I? Of who was going to bid.
Well, you would definitely have a list.
Okay, I got the text message. Actus. I knew Reyes was involved. Mensa Reyes. Actus Reyes.
Okay.
I missed that clever Latin term, actus.
I'll sleep better tonight now.
Don't they still teach Latin in law school?
No.
They don't?
They don't teach Latin in law school.
Oh, okay. I thought there was a dead language section that they still had in there.
Well, they very well may have that somewhere, but not in my law school.
Okay. All right. Well, Senator, I appreciate the inquiry.
Can I just point out one more thing before you
go right ahead. I'm going to inquire of the senator from Stoddard, who was urgently attempting to inquire of me. And by the way, just so you know, I know you're new to this whole issue because it hasn't come up. He is the sponsor of the bill that passed unanimously in 2007. And he was the bill handler with the wisdom of Solomon that helped bring all of those parties together, including Governor Matt Blunt, to sign it. So he is the architect of this compromise.
He was at the table.
That was supposed to last 5 years. So I'm shocked that he's not up offended by this, because we spent hours together in over that span of 3 years. You go ahead and make your point.
Just the very last section on page 4. It's the non-severability, and it takes into account sections 34203. 34203 says, the provisions of this section shall be known and may be cited as the Fairness to Public Construction Act. Somewhere down the line, if some judge rules that you can't call it that, the whole thing's out the window. The whole act is gone. No PLAs, nothing, over some minor thing like that. And I have to question the intent of including something like that in a bill like this.
You're referring to the last 34218?
That's correct.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is, already in the status quo, there are ample remedies for aggrieved parties. And It happens all the time. I came from local government, Senator. I know that you didn't do local government, correct? You did?
I did not.
Okay.
I trust in the states.
Yes. But I'm just saying, in local government, it is very common to get a low bid. However, that is why we have the ability to do lowest and best bid.
Right.
Because as you know, whether you're buying shoes, whether you're buying cars, whether you're buying anything, the purchase of any service, legal services, medical services, whatever it may be,
lowest bid will always be the best quality.
Yeah. Lowest is not best.
Right.
You know? Anyway, I mean, I've learned that the hard way. I was once in a rainstorm, and these shoes that I bought were very cheap, and I thought, oh, wow, I saved a lot of money, until the sole came off in the middle of the rainstorm. Yeah. So I'm saying construction's the same way. You're building schools. You're building all these things. You can't just empower them to do that. But I'll end my inquiry, and I do want to – I appreciate the inquiry. My inquiry will be later on this amendment, but I did want to – talk to you. Mr. President, thank you for the inquiry, Senator. Mr. President?
Senator from the 11th.
May I inquire of the Senator from Stoddard?
Senator from Stoddard, do you yield?
Certainly.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, I know you were, before I inquired of the Senator from 4th, I noted that you were wanting to inquire of me, and I'm inquiring of you to achieve that goal.
Well, I appreciate that.
I always
Senator.
Try to be Mr. Helper, as you know.
Well, you have been accommodating on a lot of different occasions, and I appreciate that. I just had a chance to glance at your amendment, and I thought, wow, this guy's really wanting to hammer down on people.
No, I don't really want to.
Because right now, I think it's a $50 or $500 a day fine, and can be fined up to $50,000 for a violation of an act that you have put forth here in this amendment. So I guess my question was,
well, my point is,
has it not been effective, the penalty that's in place now?
I don't think so. And if you keep in mind, the way I look at project labor agreements and all these things that we enable subdivisions to do, we've got to give them the ability to enforce construction, because it's a very tenuous, right next to my county in Lacine, Kansas, Senator. And I think I talked to you about this when you handled this compromise.
Gosh, there's been a lot of water under the bridge since that time. Wasn't that back in 07?
Yeah, but it's not 5 years worth of water. So anyway,
but absent a court case, right?
It was a short 4 months
ago. There wasn't a court
ago.
Case back then that kind of messed up our
well,
law.
I don't know that it did, but
I think it did. I think it changed
the
whole intent.
Well, I think the public, I think all the balance that you achieved is still there. I haven't heard otherwise.
Yeah, it could
anyway,
be. Could be.
The problem is, like a school district in Lacine, Kansas, that didn't have this, they actually had to have the building torn down because they had an irresponsible contractor. Now, aside from all the interest groups, there's bad construction everywhere. There's good construction.
Yeah, there really is. It doesn't matter if it's union or non-union. You get
I'm not really
you get some
to
bad apples.
I,
it
I am, though.
I don't
I
think
am,
it makes
though,
any difference.
I am. Well, here's one difference.
You may differ.
No.
And on that opinion?
No, I would tell you the difference is if I'm building a school for my school children, if I'm building a public building, I want the same ability and maybe even more to make sure that the contractor has skilled professionals who are going to do it,
sure,
that they're
sure.
going to do it on time and under budget.
And I agree. And I think that any school board, before they hired anybody to build a new school, wouldn't just haphazardly say, here's a contractor
well,
that I want to hire to build this school. I would think there'd be a record and a history of good work. And so
well, if you have it in the bid spec.
I'm confident that the local school district would not hire someone that would put together a poor school.
Well, hence my point. It didn't. They didn't do that in Lacine.
And, you know, occasionally bad
and
things happen.
And they had to tear down the building
yeah.
and start all over.
Yeah,
and
bad
then,
things happen from
and it
time
was
to time.
And it was because they didn't have too many bid specs about whether the contractor had a good history, whether they were a responsible contractor. And so imagine to those taxpayers, they got a little bit of money in the bond, but it was a low bond. And they had to go through and start all over. They had to destroy it, hire another contractor, and start all over. Now, you and I might do that when we're remodeling our kitchen,
But
no, I wouldn't. In fact, I wish you wouldn't bring that up, because I hope my wife isn't here. She hadn't had her kitchen remodeled in several years.
Well, why don't you take
I've got another project.
Why don't you take this week off?
And I may actually do it without union labor. I really may, you know.
Why don't you take this week off and go do your kitchen?
Well, you know, I was supposed to do that last week. My concern is with your amendment. Golly, you go from a maximum $50,000 penalty, and you want to keep them out for 5 years. I think that the senator from Lewis may, I don't really think there's this big a problem. That I think you're overkill on your amendment. Now, that's just my opinion.
Well, we can change it around. We've got time, but I'm just saying that's. I want to get to the theme that I want local bodies to be able to do stuff about misclassification of workers. If we're gonna pass his bill, and all the parties that sat in a room when this was your bill and worked out a compromise are now backing up right and left.
Well, I think there's been some things that have happened since that time. I mean, we've got a court case that basically has destroyed the intent of what we crafted out and passed. Times change, Senator.
Senator, I have one.
It's an evolving world.
I have one court case in which a suit was brought, and they didn't even bid. Do we want that? Is that reasonable? Does that make sense? Now, anybody who didn't even bid, I guess the way he has it worded, I don't even have to be a contractor. I can just say, I wanted to do that electrical work. So what I'm saying is, we're going back. The last time that you handled this bill, you had all the parties involved in construction. This side, this side, this side, and you worked it out. And if you're going to revisit that, something that we spent 2.5, it predated my entry to the Senate, that the Senate had grappled with for 5 years, and you came up with a pretty good balance. And if you're talking about changing something, bring all those parties back.
Sure, sure. I'm sure the sponsor
would be. I'm not faulting
the
senator from. I'm just saying that hasn't happened. We're listening to one side of the debate, and you can't. If you were doing a telecommunications bill, you couldn't do that, and you wouldn't do that.
The reason for my inquiry is I think your amendment is unreasonable, and I think the body ought to vote it down if we get to a chance to vote it. And I mean, you know, I know you're
well,
trying
I might
to
have an
make
amendment.
Things better.
But, Senator, I might have an amendment to the amendment, and, you know.
You could.
You know, I build sometimes.
You're very creative. You're a builder.
I build tree houses sometimes.
You're a builder, and I respect that, and I appreciate people that can do that, but I just don't like your amendment here, and I think it's overkill and very onerous and burdensome.
Will you help me improve it?
I would just recommend that the body kill the amendment.
Three senators are standing on the floor at the same time. Senator from Lewis, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I ask that Senate Bill 175 be laid over on the informal calendar.
It will be laid over on the informal calendar. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will be the order of business of announcements, and I ask you to recognize me for an announcement.
Announcement, Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ask members to prepare for upcoming legislation, both for this afternoon and possibly tomorrow, Senate Bill 280, Senate Bill 203, and Senate Bill 176.
Further announcements. Senator from the 7th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to remind your committee on general laws that we do have a hearing this afternoon, and we will have an exec session, and that will be at 1:30 in Senate Hearing Room 1.
Thank you. Further announcements. Further announcements. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, I move the Senate stand in recess until 3 p.m. this day.
Seeing no objection, the Senate will stand in recess until 3 p.m. this day. Senator from the 23rd moves that we are in recess until 3 p.m. this afternoon. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We are in recess until 3 p.m. today.